Welcome, everybody. It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Good to be with you, everybody. It's a nice warm day here today, and we've got a guest here in the studio. It's a little warm in the studio, but we'll survive it. And welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. And our topic for today is what you need to know about listening. And our guest is John White, executive coach and author, and he's going to be talking about his new book of the same title. And we'll get with John in just a minute. Let me just remind you, next week, we're going to have Scott Grossberg with us. Topic, Stop Wishing and Start Having. And Scott says, too often we feel that we're stuck in a rut and we're not living our dreams and we're unfulfilled. He's a personal productivity wizard, and he's going to be joining us showing how you can be and do anything you want. And if you've ever been afraid of living an insignificant life and you're excited about personal growth and new knowledge, then we guarantee this show is for you. Let me just tell you, this is going to be interesting. Scott is also a professional magician, so anything could happen on next week's show. But hey, enough about next week's show. We are really honored to have John White with us today. Let me tell you a little bit about his background. John began his career teaching communications, moved on to build a small chain of travel agencies, and later sold them for 10 times his initial investment. John followed that with 20 years as a successful top-level business leader in the medical device industry. And he now works as an executive coach and speaker with practical knowledge that he's brought from each of his past experiences. His work has impacted leaders throughout North America, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. Wow, that goes way beyond Orange County. That's my limit. With a passionate interest in the behaviors necessary to provide outstanding leadership, John's professional journey has led him to focus on listening because he believes it to be the skill that is fundamental to almost all other leadership attributes. And he is co-author of What You Don't Know About Listening Could Fill a Book. John, welcome to The Coaching Perspective.
Thanks, Doug. It's nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, hey, it's a pleasure to have you here, and it's timely with your book just having kicked off, what, 2 months ago?
In May,
a little more.
Yeah, a little bit, and we're very pleased.
Well, that's great. Well, look, John, let's start off a couple of our sort of standard questions. What'd you do before what you're doing now?
Well, you described it pretty well. I started teaching communications in a public high school and then had an entrepreneurial stage of my life that went very well, mentored by a great partner, and then went into corporate life. And I actually started in human resources, in learning and development. Called that then, and I was a member of ASTD. But I got moved into manufacturing at some point, and I really found myself and ended up running manufacturing departments and then plants and then businesses. And my niche in business became whenever the company acquired something, I would go there and help assimilate it into the corporation. And I did four of those in about 15 years. The first as a participant, and then three of them I actually led. And you learn a lot about leadership. You learn a lot about the psychology of change and how to lead in the midst of change. And it was a tremendous experience for me. At the end of that, I was exhausted and I had determined that I probably didn't want to be president of something and that I saw that my core competency really was about leadership and how could I do something with that. And that led to consulting and ultimately to coaching.
Would you know, there's a lot of talk these days about following your passion and how do you find your passion, how do you identify your purpose in life. Was that a purpose search or a passion search when you made that change?
I don't know that I would have labeled it that then, but that is a popular way to look at it now. I knew that I did my best work when I was passionate, there's no question. And I wanted to be passionate about my work. And you would find yourself, I mean, everyone has a certain percentage of their day that they don't enjoy. I mean, for me, it's doing the accounting part of my business or whatever it is, or sending out invoices. But you want to try to get as high a percentage of that in the sweet spot as you can. And you know when that happens, and you feel it, and you do your best work. Your clients know you're doing good work. So I really didn't know when I started out that it was a search for passion. but it resonated when I found it. No question.
Okay. And let me, if it's okay, just stick with us for just a minute here.
Sure.
Because many people think that, you know, passion is one thing. I mean, I come out of the womb and I'm passionate about something, and I'm going to go do that until the day I die. But you've had a really varied career, and my assumption is you were successful in each one of those careers. You were a good teacher, you were a good manager, you were a good entrepreneur, you know. So did your passion change, or?
Well, I think if I get to two words, I think are at the center of it, and I don't think I was as good at all of those things. I had a modicum of success at each of them,
okay.
And I built on that. I think my greatest success has come as I've wizened with age, I think two words that would sort of describe the path for me, and it's a word my wife and I share every day, gratefulness. I'm grateful for this opportunity to be alive. I'm grateful to my parents for giving it to me, to being surrounded by family, friends, critical mentors along the way. Gratefulness has a lot to do with what I began to recognize was something that I felt every day when I got up. And that drove me to a feeling about continuous improvement. If I'm grateful for this opportunity, I ought to do something with it. I don't think I did that when I first started out. I think I was a little lazy maybe not as curious about life as I could have been. But it led to have a driving force of looking for continuous improvement, starting with myself, that I should improve myself. And then if I can improve a process, that would be good too. And the effect would be, of course, a better marriage, a better family, better friendships, better work with clients. So when I started to think about that, and then I started to look at, it's not just passion, it also has to be competence.
Okay.
So you combine the two, and I think the success increases. I mean, I had a passion for music, and I wrote music when I was young. But I wouldn't be making a living at it today.
Yeah, I have a passion for music too, but I'm limited to being the audience for the rest of the family.
See, there you are.
And I tell them, every great musician needs an audience, and that's my role.
That's right. Okay.
Well, look, okay, so let's move on. Tell us about your business today. What is it that you do? And it's sort of multifaceted, but explain it.
Well, mostly it is coaching, one-on-one with senior executives. And my business model is to tend to work with two or three companies at a time and work deeply with them and work for a long time. So I might be around the same company for a number of years. I mean, there's one company that I think I'm the only person that coaches in the company, and I've been working with them for 10 years. And there's always an assignment of some sort. That leads to deep relationships, understanding and being able to add value. And quite frankly, also, it means that you don't do any marketing. Everything's by referral. And I really wasn't much of a salesperson around this. So I think it was much better for me to have this business model. And so I'm working with, I would say, about three companies. With one company, I have five assignments. And they're wonderful people. They're very bright. Benefit from coaching, and I can work deeply with them. I understand their company, I understand their peers, so that's very satisfying. In addition to that coaching, I still do a little bit of consulting. At the beginning of my practice, I did a lot of consulting because I thought, well, I can integrate acquisitions, I can do lean manufacturing, I can do all these things. Yes, I can, but I wasn't passionate about them, so I didn't do my best work. So I still have a passion for two topics, and I do some consulting around them and do some speaking around them. One is the psychology of change, how leaders must behave in the midst of change. Not change management so much, but really the leadership behaviors that really help people accept change and move on and get excited about what they can do within their companies. And the other is intrinsic motivation. I've always been fascinated about what makes people repeat behavior. What makes them do the things that they do? And a combination of having studied that and my own experience of leading turnaround situations and all of these acquisitions, I sort of figured out some things that are useful to other people. So I do consulting around that with companies as well. So that's a sort of a minor part of the practice anymore. And certainly for the last 2.5 years, a major part of the practice has been writing the book.
Okay, so for the coaches that are listening out there,
sure.
What is it that attracts a client to you versus another coach? What do you think that is?
I think there's two things, and then partly its process. One thing is that the coaches, the companies that like me, or the clients that are attracted to me, like the fact that I had business experience. And not all coaches do, and not all clients want that. Some clients want somebody with a strong background in psychology or some other basis. My background is in business, and so I've walked in the shoes of the people that I coach. But that means I have to be sure they also have a good coaching process to make sure that I just don't give people answers because I've been there before. I need to draw out of them the answers that are right for them. I have to use a good coaching process. Another part of the process for me, I think, that differentiates me is the first meeting I have with clients. I look at the first meeting as a coaching opportunity, not a selling opportunity. I'm there to help them any way I can. If they don't choose me, it's fine with me. They can choose somebody else. That's what they should do. But if there's some way I can add value in that meeting, then I'll be pleased to have had the meeting with them. And usually there's something that comes up that's interesting and we get talking about. And so sometimes they give me 20 minutes, we take 40, or they'll give me 40 minutes, but we end up using 60. And I guess probably end up with more assignments than I don't. And I don't think it's because I'm necessarily better than the other coaches that come through the door, but my emphasis is on what can I do to help you here today.
You know, I have the feeling that you bring value to all the relationships you have in your life.
Try.
That's a key thing for you.
Try.
Not what you get from it, but what you can give to it.
I think if you do that, then you get.
Yeah.
I mean, it just follows.
Well, look, we have a question that we've asked every guest we've ever had on the show over the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we've not had a duplicate yet, so don't break my record here. What particular experience or what is the guiding principle that sort of sets your true north?
Well, I'm going to have to repeat myself, maybe not somebody else, but it really goes back to the gratefulness. I'm very lucky. I'm very grateful.
You know, I like the term gratefulness. I listened to a speaker earlier today talking about finding your purpose in life. And they talked about one of the key things was identifying your blessings.
Mm.
And the word blessing didn't really resonate well with me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know why. It just didn't sound right in the context. But I made a note when you said gratefulness the first time here this afternoon. That's the replacement word that's better for me.
I think everybody could find a word that works for them. Some might have a more spiritual overtone or something. For me, it's just you wake up in the morning and you go, look what I've been given. Many of us choose to do the opposite. And I've had periods, I've had days, and some people have many days, unfortunately, where the choice they make in the morning is not to be grateful. But if you choose to be grateful, there's boundless opportunity in front of you. There really is.
Let me ask you a coaching question here.
Sure.
Now, your coaching training, did you go through formal training?
I had a master coach. For a while, my business model, because I wasn't known locally, because my business career had been more national, even international, I didn't really have a local following. So I formed a strategic relationship with Lee Hecht Harrison. And they gave me a master coach, and she's one of the finest coaches, I think, in the country, Stanley Phelps.
Oh, I love Stanley.
She's just tremendous.
She's great.
And we're very close friends to this day. And I still rely on her. I'll still call her if I've got a coaching problem, a dilemma that I really need, and she'll nudge me and get me going in the right direction. And so most of my training came in relation to her being my master coach. And I did not choose to get certified. If I were starting now, I think I would be obliged to. But I started many years ago, and I was so busy with my practice that I chose not to get certified. And I can't be certified by anybody better than Stanley.
I think being certified by Stanley is all you need in life. So do you have a formal process that you follow from a coaching point of view that you use with your clients? Or is it more intuitive based on your business experience?
Well, it starts formal in that they need structure. They need to understand what to expect. Otherwise, they wouldn't probably engage. So I basically look at sort of a four-step model of, you know, first starting with the contracting phase, getting to know each other, figuring out what this is about, and then going through a discovery phase where we find out, well, is this coaching about what you said it was about, or is it really something else? And we ought to figure that out pretty quickly. And then we go through basically a learning stage where we figure out the best way for this person to learn. Does this person learn through us meeting frequently, less frequently, reading more, talking to people? What's going to be the right way for this person to learn? And then my job during that is to really provoke as much learning as I can. I consider myself to be provocative, you know, that I'm there to ask questions and make somebody think differently, or occasionally offer alternatives, but I ask for permission for that. And then the last stage, I call it sustainability. How do I put this person in a position to sustain whatever change that's taken place and continue growing and learning without me? Because they should be able to do it independent of me. Now, there's been a few assignments that have gone on literally for years, but that's not the goal in the beginning. The goal is to go through those four steps and at the end of it have somebody sustain some sort of change that makes them more effective and allows them to continue to learn themselves. So within that framework then, it becomes a little bit more intuitive. Experience lends its part, study lends its part, the work with Stanley lends its part, being part of PCMA back when I was part of PCMA, that both of us shared that experience.
Right.
All of those things. I spend time with other coaches. There's one group of coaches we get together every month for lunch. I've always had that practice when I've been able to, because we learn things from that. And that all mixes into what happens when I'm working with clients.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book. What led you to write a book? I mean, you and I chatted a little bit before the radio show about what was the purpose in writing a book and how many different reasons people have given us over time. Tell us, what led you to this book?
Yeah, I think that discussion in the lobby is kind of interesting, because a lot of people right away think that I've written the book as sort of a business card for building a practice. But you're sitting across the table from me, so you know how old I am. I'm not in the business building part of my career now, and so it really wasn't for that purpose. And some people do it, of course, because they think they'll make money, and the average business book does not turn out to be profitable. This really was more about, in the course of doing this work, both my leadership career and particularly this coaching phase, I found a behavior that I thought was foundational to so many other elements that are important to successful leadership, and that was listening. And there's already lots of books on listening, so there was no reason to go out and write one. But the more I talked about my approach or my perspective, or provoked people to change their behavior in a way that I thought might be helpful to them, it seemed to resonate with people. And so I got more requests to speak about it. I got more requests to bring it up within the coaching and make it, if not the centerpiece, at least a part of the coaching work that I was doing with individuals, that I felt that it was time to see if there was a way to share that with a wider audience. I can only coach so many people. I can only speak to so many people. And so that's where the decision came from. And if in choosing a writing partner, we sat down, Alexander Takeda and I, and we said, let's have some goals. Our first two goals, the first goal was to have fun. We're going to have fun doing this together. If it's not fun, we're not going to do it. The second is do something that we're proud of. And we achieved the first two in the 2.5 years that we worked on this. And we had a lot of fun. The relationship grew closer and closer. The book got better and better with every change. And there were many changes in titles and structure and chapters. And in the end, if we can reach a number of people and change the way they're communicating with one another in business as leaders, we'll be very, very pleased.
So 2.5 years, and you wrote it with a partner.
Yes.
Do you think she's listening?
Well, she might not be today. She is relocated to the East Coast and is in the midst of settling family into schools this time of the year. So she may not be at the moment, but she certainly will hear the podcast.
Okay, well, then I was going to ask you, well, you know, how is it working with a partner? But we'll ask anyhow. So do you having been through the experience, what advice would you give people about either writing alone or writing with a partner?
Well, I think every individual is going to have a different take on that. I had a specific reason for it. I have the concepts. I have the ideas. I tend to be a big picture thinker. Alexandra, I had met while doing an assignment with a company, and she was internal to that company. She had left to go off and on family leave to have a second child, and I called her and said, would you like to write a book? And she said, not really. I didn't take that personally, but I said, well, how about we write a chapter and see how it goes? And she really had a lot of experience in adult learning. And what I saw different about this book is it's not just talking about listening, but getting down to some core behaviors that could be easily learned and therefore be very practical for the very busy people I work with. I work with people that get 400 emails a day. How are they going to take time to learn anything new? So how do I digest this and get it down into something that is a really core concept? And we really have it down to a single behavior that has three characteristics. And if you use those three characteristics with some other surrounding bits that we end up putting in the book, and then with Alexandra's ability to say, well, this is how you could practice that, so you could learn it, so you could own it, so you could sustain it. And that was the magic of having a partner for me. But let me say beyond that then, the news flash would be having an editor that is really, really good is terribly important. I'm more of a speaker, I'm extroverted, and it sounds like I should easily be able to put my vocal ideas down on paper. And when it's on paper, it's just not the same. And we just had a superior editor that did not change our point of view, but made the book much more accessible to the reader. And I think it's one of the reasons why it's going to be as successful as it is.
Wonderful. So before we go to commercial here, you said two things. One I'll cover when we come back. But you said for the book to be successful, how do you define success for your book?
That people call up and say it's changed something about something that the way I do something, and it's made it better today than it was yesterday.
Okay, great. Well, look, our producer's waving at me that he's ready to go with the commercial, so we'll be right back. Okay, and we're back, and if you're just tuning in, where the heck were you when we started at 4 o'clock? But anyhow, we're talking to John White, executive coach and author. And we're talking about his new book here today, all about listening. John, before we get to the book, you've used the term assignment a number of times in this discussion. You talk about your coaching with a client, and then you talk about you have a number of assignments with the client. I haven't heard it put that way. Explain what you're talking about there when you say assignments.
Gosh, nobody's ever asked me that before, and I didn't even realize I was using the word. I guess I look at the engagement. Maybe other people would use that word, or coaching contract or whatever, but as sort of an assignment. Maybe that's because I am working with companies, and so they call up and they give me another assignment. It's sort of like I'm so almost internal. I mean, most of the companies I work with, I end up with a badge, and I come and go, and, you know, I'm sort of like, you know, a member of the, I'm sometimes invited on, you know, to their social events. So it's a little bit like being internal, but yet I still am external, and I bring that external view to them and the independence where I can be really honest with them. But I haven't realized, Doug, that I use the word assignment. You're the first person to ever ask me. I don't know that it means anything more than that.
Well, it intrigues me because so many coaches talk about engagement, and clients ask the question early on about, you know, how long does this go?
Yes.
And your term assignment sort of sounds like you've defined with the client clearly what we're coaching about.
Yes.
There's a start and there's going to be an end, which doesn't mean our coaching might end, but it's that assignment will be over. Right. And then if there's another one, fine, we'll coach on that. But I liked that in that it, I think it gives some reassurance to the client that this isn't a permanent lifetime lay on the couch relationship.
Yes, and that's very important to me. I want to do only what needs to be done in the coaching. I don't want to create more work for myself. I want to be seen as a valued asset that's used when it's critical. And so I don't know that that's where the word assignment came from, but you've grasped what I am about, which is that I want to work with the client for the time that's appropriate in the number of ways. I've had clients where I've only had 6 sessions with them, and we're done. And I've had, again, as I mentioned before, some that have gone on for years. And I've had some where we meet really every week intensely, and I've had others where we probably meet once a month. It is the nature of what needs to be learned and how they learn and the challenge that they're facing that's important, not my engagement, not my contract, not my income. So all of that is part of discussing what the assignment is. I guess I didn't realize I was using the word.
Well, I like the way you put it. That's why it stuck out for me. So let's talk about your book some more. Lots of books on listening. You mentioned that. What's different about yours?
I mentioned that this idea that we get down to one concept, because there's lots of good books on listening. I'll have to say that. But I think people need something that's very practical and helps them get to the core of what it's about. And a lot of books on listening are what you could do to listen, but they don't necessarily demonstrate to the other person that you are actually listening. And that's the key. Unless we actually use behaviors that demonstrate to another person that we truly are hearing them, they don't know that we're listening. And when we talk to people, it's interesting that most people will say they think they're pretty good listeners, but those same people will say that most people are not good listeners. So what's going on is that there are some habits that we've learned from a very early age. I mean, we learn listening by copying people. We're not born with the ability to listen. We copy our parents and our siblings and our teachers and our friends. And the habits that we learn are not based on what actually proves to another human being that you are listening. Therefore, do not demonstrate that you're empathetic, consensual. And by the way, it gets more important than that for a business leader, in that there's a correlation in research between somebody who's perceived as being a good listener and somebody that's being perceived as being strategic. So it's not just the what we would call the soft skill side of business, where we would say, well, to be seen as a likable manager, you ought to be a good listener. We actually see highly effective business people usually are very good listeners. But what are those behaviors? And so we try to get down to, again, the one critical behavior and the three characteristics of that behavior, which, I'll say this, and I'll be careful about it, literally could be learned overnight. And the next day you could be a better communicator. Having said that, to sustain it, because of these years of doing it the wrong way, you fall back into those habits. And there's some reasons, some of them brain chemistry as well as habits, that make you go back into those habits. So it really does take some sustained practice. That's where Alexandra was really handy in this, to say, here's like five exercises you could do around this one characteristic. And maybe if you do one or two of those exercises, you could actually sustain this behavior change. I'd have to say, I've been working on this approach for over a decade, and I still fall back into poor listening. It's habit.
You know, as I was thinking about our conversation during the week and thinking about listening, what struck me is that the only relationship that I feel I get feedback on whether I'm listening well or not is probably with my wife. Certainly not in a business situation. Mm-hmm. Now, if you know, occasionally somebody in a business situation says you aren't listening to me, but you don't get really constructive feedback in a business environment about whether you could improve your listening or you're not listening well. Maybe from your spouse is the only place I know of where I would get that. Speak to that.
I think you're right. I think that in the closest, most intimate relationship, if it's a trusting one, we'll get that feedback. So I compliment you that you must have a trusting relationship, because if that intimate relationship isn't trusting, then you may not get that feedback. And I think that's what happens in business. It's if we go to seeking feedback from someone, then we may get honest feedback, but there has to be a high degree of trust. But giving the feedback without somebody asking for it could destroy trust, so people are reluctant to do it. So it's usually only through some sort of learning experience that somebody gets some feedback, like taking a 360, what we call assessment, or working with a coach, that we might learn that listening is a problem or communication skills are a problem. But I think you're right. Most of us don't get that, so we don't recognize, perhaps, how much damage we're doing in the relationships or how much energy is unleveraged in our organization because we aren't listening enough. And in fact, we also know that highly successful leaders are very persuasive. So there's a tendency to overuse persuasion and underuse listening. And listening is actually more powerful.
You know, let me ask you this, because I'm like everybody else that you mentioned. I'm a good listener.
I think you are.
I think I'm a good listener.
I think you are.
So I'm thinking about, should I buy this book or not? And do I need this book? And if I buy this book and I read the advice that you have in the book about how to listen better, how will I know that I have changed anything? Do you address that?
Well, I think you'll feel it and you will hear it. You will get feedback about it. So let me say two things about this. First, you spotted a dilemma in this. How do you get this book to someone? The book is for somebody who needs to learn how to listen, but everybody thinks they listen well.
Yeah.
So who's going to walk by a bookstore and pick this book up? So that's one of our decisions about our channel of getting this book out, is to get it out through learning and development people, HR people, other business leaders who know that listening is an issue within their organization. So I have a company I'm working with right now where they've determined that this is a core competency that they need to improve, and they want a lot of these books, which is great. Now, so the dilemma is, how do we get to the person who really needs it? That's a little bit tough, because everybody else will go by and look at a self-help book and say, oh, I'd like to do that. But listening, not so much. The second thing is, we do want to see that somebody feels a change or sees a change afterwards. So I can only say that I know I've seen it myself, and I see it in the people that I coach, and we're starting to see it in the people that read the book. A couple of weeks ago, a woman over a weekend read the first few chapters of the book, went into a conversation where she had to tell someone, you are not going to get promoted. You're an internal candidate, and you're not going to get promoted. And she was really not looking forward to this conversation. You know what those business conversations
are
like.
Absolutely.
You know the person's heart's set on it. They feel they deserve it. They're internal. They should get the promotion. She used some of what we talk about in this book to have that conversation and sent us an email immediately to say, this went so much better than I expected. Now, I have to tell you that I can't recommend that somebody get the book and go into that kind of conversation the very next week. However, you really can change the way you're communicating. And I say that you start with the safest relationships, maybe even a spouse. Use this with a spouse and say, I've read this book that John and Alexandra wrote and Doug hopefully recommended, and I want to try something out in our relationship, this trusting relationship, and see if we actually communicate better. And if you learn that you do, then you'll be more eager to try it someplace else. Don't walk into the most difficult conversation. Don't walk into the most difficult relationship and try to use a new behavior. Because if you fail, it will tell you the book was wrong. I don't think so. I think the situation was wrong.
So, you know, it strikes me as I'm listening to you talk about this, that this might be an excellent book for a coach to share with a client, that the coach may have identified the client has a listening problem. And the coach can then work with the client and give the client feedback on how they are improving as a result of using the book. Or the HR department, or so that maybe this is a guidebook in many ways, more than self-help.
Yes, we avoided calling it a workbook, but you could almost call it a workbook, something that stays at somebody's side for their whole career and they go back to. So the first part of the book is about theory. The last part of the book is applying it to all the common business situations, applying it to hiring people, to delegating to them, to reviewing their performance, and you'll go and learn how to use the techniques and maybe another little tidbit or watch out, be aware of this kind of thing. So yes, in fact, I'm speaking at the International Coaches Federation this evening because I think it's something coaches could use in one of two ways. One, to help them with their clients to be better at asking questions and coaching. Also, to help their clients be better listeners. Or if they know that their coachee likes to learn by reading, then giving them the book or sharing the book with them might be a valuable thing to do. All of those methods would be fine with us. Changing people's behavior is what's important.
Okay. Well, you know, our audience is coaches, HR professionals, and business executives. And I think especially for the HR and the coach people listening, coaches, this can be an excellent tool for them to use and to make available in situations that they are constantly running into where they can see it's needed.
We totally agree, and that's what we consider to be, in essence, our market. Not because they need it, but they know who needs it.
They know who needs it. Okay, so let me ask you, the book is labeled the Leadership Edition. Is there a non-leadership edition?
Well, as we started to put the book together, it became clear there's a lot of things that we're not covering about people's personal lives, and this obviously has great application there. And I don't know that there will be a second one, but if one is to be a dreamer, and I am a bit of a dreamer, and we have already had some people say, we really need this book for our personal lives. We've looked at What You Don't Know About Listening Could Fill a Book, personal edition. And instead of it being about then all of the business functions of hiring, et cetera, it would be all the stages of life. And the one that I'm very particularly interested in, and have been for much of my life, is the later stages of life and death and dying, and the awkwardness all of us have on communicating with people that are either facing that or grieving the passing of someone. And in fact, there's pretty good understanding in the psychology of the human experience that listening is more important than speaking when somebody is grieving. And so that chapter in particular of the second edition of our book would be very interesting to me. But I don't know if we'll get to that. We have a lot of work to do with the first edition.
So the term Leadership Edition is really referring to the fact that it's primarily a business tool.
Yes, there's lots of...
Not that it's just an executive...
Yes, all the scenarios that are there that people can read to see how the languaging is used are around business situations. So a first-line manager up through a top executive could relate to that and say, I can see doing this at work. Okay. That's the reason.
All right. So for our non-readers out there or our reluctant purchasers who have to have things proved to them, give us an example of something that we could get from the book that we could use.
Well, let me tell you what the book is all about. I'll give it all for free right here. I think the most important thing is to understand that, again, listening is about getting the other person to talk, not our doing the talking. And the vehicle for doing that, or the particular behavior, is asking questions. And I think most people actually know that if they think about it. If I ask you a question, the way you've been asking me questions here now for several minutes, it really gets me to talk. And you learn more about me because of the way you ask those questions. So what we do in the book is try to do the three characteristics of a question that make it valuable as a listening tool. So those three characteristics are very simple, is that they're open-ended questions, and you've asked lots of open-ended questions, that the questions go vertical into a topic. Now, we use that term carefully because a lot of people like the word probing, but probing has come to have a connotation of putting people on the defensive because it tends to mean that there's an agenda. And a really good open-ended question is one that doesn't really have an agenda. It's going to wander where it goes. It shows curiosity. And so an open-ended question that is vertical, as we call it, and then starts with the right words from a neuro-linguistic point of view. Now, I'll leave that part out because we don't have time for it. But if you put those three characteristics together and ask question after question in that mode, people will really feel listened to in a way they have not been felt listened to in some time. And you will learn more about them, and you will be more effective in leading them. We believe that truly.
Help me a little bit more with the definition of vertical. I know you talk about horizontal and vertical, but what I'm not sure it's obvious what you mean by vertical questions.
No, it's not. And there's maybe why I haven't given the whole thing away, and the book has some purpose in life because it does need a little more explanation. But I'll help people with it as best I can quickly. We chose vertical because the image that has in comparison to what we call horizontal talk, which is sort of like small talk. You know, how's the weather? What'd you do today? How'd you get here? You know, the kinds of things that, you know, maybe when we first shake hands and say hello.
Yeah.
We all do plenty of that, and it's fine. There's nothing wrong with small talk. But vertical means that we're going to go into somebody in some way, not in a way that is offensive or embarrassing, only to the degree that they want to, but it's coming from what they've just said. The vertical takeoff is something that was just said. You wrote in the margin of the paper in front of you, grateful, and you asked me about it. that makes a rich conversation. You could have let the whole interview go without asking again about grateful. So that was a vertical question.
Okay.
You have that sense naturally. Most people do not. And part of it is because what they're doing when they're listening is they're forming their response to what the person's saying rather than looking for the vertical link. If you look for the vertical link, the conversation gets rich, deep. We learn more about people. We know how they think, how they feel, what they'll do, how they decide, all the things that are really important in leadership.
You know, the thing that comes to my mind when you talk about it, and I just had an example with the receptionist in the green room while I was waiting for you, and she asked me, how's your day? Okay. It's the kind of question that 9 times out of 10, she wouldn't even be listening to the answer.
True.
You know, it's just one of those fillers.
Yeah.
And when people ask me those kinds of questions, I try to respond with something that makes them stop and go, what?
Exactly.
You know, because I'm not going to say good or bad or okay, or because that's what they're expecting, and it means they're not even listening.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're, that's the example I'm
It's a perfect example, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's sort of a way of showing politeness to ask about your day, and there's nothing wrong with that. But beyond that, in those special relationships, whether it be marriage or whether it be a business relationship where we're counting on people to give hours of their time to make something successful together, then we need to go beyond small talk. We really do.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think it's – I'm going to say that it's not even special relationships. I'd like to think that every relationship goes beyond.
Every relationship has that potential.
You know, I believe me, I do not have a special relationship with the receptionist upstairs. I want to get that clear right now.
Doug's
case
wife,
my wife
please,
is listening.
Please be alerted.
But
she wasn't very attractive, though, I noticed.
Oh, now you got me in trouble. But when she did say, you know, how's your day? And I said, all my days are great. Mm-hmm. She stopped what she was doing, turned around, said,
exactly.
What do you do?
Yeah.
She was now curious. She was
absolutely
interested. We talked, and I got to know her a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that could be happening in all the relationships we have. And people walk away actually feeling better about their day because of those contacts with other human beings.
So listening, as you're talking about it, has to do with not just listening, but it's how you're presenting and how you're participating in the conversation.
How you're participating. I'll leave the word presenting out because that might get us to persuading or talking ourselves. But how we show up and how we facilitate, in essence, the conversation is really what's going on. We could use all of the nodding our head and yeah, uh-huh, and like the receptionist could have saying, oh, fine. And that's okay for small talk. But if we want to facilitate the conversation, listening is about asking that next great question.
John, this has been fascinating. I have truly enjoyed this here today. As we're getting ready to sort of wrap up here, a couple of things. One is there anything else you want to share with the audience that I've either talked over you or passed by that you want to go into a little bit more?
I don't think so. I've really enjoyed the conversation, Doug, and I think, you know, you show that you're a good listener. You're showing a great example by what you're doing on this radio program. So people should listen and follow your example.
Well, I hope somebody's out there listening. And, okay, so tell our audience, how do they get a hold of you? How do they buy the book? Let's get down to the nitty-gritty here.
Sure. Well, they can go to our website, which is www.whatyoudon'tknowaboutlistening. Don't put the apostrophe in, and I know that's a long URL, but if you put that in and save it, and then you can search it anytime. We have a website, and we're going to have articles there that people can read about listening and things that come to our mind from time to time. And you can order directly from there. The book is available through Amazon. It isn't available digitally yet, but it probably will before the year is out. And we encourage people to share ideas about listening and become better listeners.
Okay. And if people are interested in talking to you about coaching, how do they get a hold of you for coaching?
Well, they can certainly call me, 949-244-3330.
What an old-fashioned method that is.
That's okay. An old-fashioned method. Or they can just email me at jonwhite@cox.net.
Sounds great. Well, John, thank you very much for being with us today. This has been just a fascinating interview, and I've learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to the book.
Thanks so much, Doug. I really enjoyed it, too.
Great, and welcome to the Coaching Perspective business community.
Thank you.
Well, look, we've had a great conversation here today. They're all great conversations, but John White has really got us going on how to listen better, and great resource material. I think this is, I'm going to have to break my trend and buy this book. I buy a lot of books, but I've really tried to go to digital only, so I don't think I can wait right now, and I'll have to get it immediately. Thanks. If you're listening to our podcast, thank you very much for tuning in and listening to the podcast. If you want to catch us live, we're on octalkradio.net on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Once in a while during the month, we'll take a break on a Thursday, but basically every Thursday. And if you're looking for the podcast, well, you can find it on our website, thecoachingperspective.com, or on Podbeam by going to dgefeller, D-G-F-E-L-L-E-R, .podbeam.com. Well, look, I hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope that we have given you some things to think about here today, some information and tips that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening. You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The coaching perspective. Maybe the listening perspective. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.